Lansing Fisher Body Historical Interview with Mr. Lewis C. Suddeth as December 7th, is it? Mm-hmm. December 7th, 2005. We're at UAW Local 602 Conference Room. My name is Marilyn Coulter, and my co-interviewer is?
Doreen Howard.
And Mr. Suddeth, could you please state your name and spell it for us, please?
Uh-huh. My name is Lou C. Suddeth, L-U-E, initial C, and S-U-D-D-U-T-H.
Thank you. So, Mr. Suddeth, can you tell us, are you a resident of Lansing?
Yes, I am.
Are you married with children?
Yes, I am. I'm married with a wife and three children. Do you want the name?
If you want.
Okay. The oldest is Deborah Jean Suddeth, and she's 49. And the next one is Johnny Lou Suddeth, and he's 47. Okay. He worked at Fisher, you know.
Okay, yes,
Johnny Lou Suddeth, and he's 47 years old. And he worked at Fisher Body for 20-something years. And relocated to Doraville, Georgia. And their youngest son, he went to California for a scholarship at UCLA in football. And he got out there, and he didn't like UCLA, and I don't either. He wanted to go to USC, so I couldn't afford it. So he turns around and go to Cal Polytech and get a degree. Then he goes to Long Beach and get a degree. And he turns around and go to criminal justice and get a degree. So he's in the law enforcement there. And last I talked to him, he had passed a test for a detective. And I have about 7 grandkids, 6 great-grandkids. And my wife and I, if we live to see August of 2006, we'll be married for 50 years. Without any divorce or any split up, and mostly any hang ups. And we just enjoyed raising our children, and now the great grandchildren, we kind of like to get them every once in a while and enjoy them. Mm-hmm. So we just enjoy our life, and we go to church. Mm-hmm. And we usually, we spend the winter in Arizona and California. But when we start having grandkids, we kind of got stuck with them. Like, my wife think can't nobody take care of them but her. And we just enjoy it. And the oldest one is 14. And the youngest one is about 2 years old. So, but they scattered around. One is in Dallas, Texas, her and her mother and dad, and another one's in Maryland, her mother and dad. And we are just a happy-go-lucky kind of family. We get along good.
Okay, great. And
I didn't get my address.
Oh.
And my address is 3627 Jerry Street, Lansing, Michigan, 48911.
Right. Mr. Suddeth, can you tell us what year did you hire in to Fisher Body?
November of 1954. And I got hired in there. And I really, really had a good time. I enjoyed it. I'd been from a worker employee to supervisor back to the skilled trade. And I really, really enjoyed it.
So, and so when you walked in, what did you think of the building when you first came in?
Well, I knew it was a place of work, but I just was surprised at the building of automobiles and what it take to build an automobile.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a real, real experience. And I guess I worked from the body shop, paint shop, trim. Actually, I worked all over the place.
Which one did you hire in initially?
I hired in the sealer room.
So that would be in the paint shop?
That would be paint shop when I hired in. It was in the sealer room. And you know, it's a funny thing. We used to have to, what they call, trucking the bodies. We had to have one man in the front pulling and one man behind pushing. And I had my partner was a big guy, weighed about 280. And I was a little guy, and I was always on the back. But a lot of time when we get to moving it, I jump on and ride the back. Well, as a young man, I mean, it didn't bother me. But I really had a nice time. I really enjoyed it. And I had a lot of friends that we went fishing and hunting after work and thing. And I really, really loved that. And I just was a guy that wouldn't take long. To me, I could look at a job, and in 20 minutes, I could do it. I didn't take no 3 days to break in, but they give you 3 days to break in. But I'd look at a job and decide I want to do it. I just go ahead and do it. Mm-hmm. And I really got along with all the supervisors, the plant managers, and the people thought a lot of me everywhere I went. Then I went in the trade. And when I went in trade,
what trade were you in when you went to
paint?
You were in the paint trade.
Mm-hmm. So I make paint mixer.
You were a paint mixer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so were you during your whole time there? Did you primarily do most of your time in the paint department?
I did 27 years in the paint department, mm-hmm. And I sent the samples in to the government so long. Tell it they wouldn't even test it no more than they'll test it. So I sent it in for 27 years, and I took a 3 weeks vacation. And somebody else sent it in and then signed my name. So they sent three men in there to close the shop down. And when they got there, they asked for me because they thought I had retired. And they said, no, he's just on vacation. They said, when will he be back? He said, well, he's supposed to be back Monday. He said, well, we'll let you run today and tomorrow, which was Thursday and Friday. Said, but we're going to send three or four men in. You got to run an efficiency test. A paint efficiency test consisted of really checking all the paints and the viscosity. The viscosity was something like a little number three cup, and you had to have the number, whether you run it for 30 seconds. And how fast it ran out would be like 3 to 5, the number of it. So in that way, you wouldn't get a lot of skim and stuff to go on the outside of the building. So then after that, we run the efficiency test. And then from then on, everybody was sent it in. They signed my name to it. And they never checked mine. After that, when I first started sending in, they checked it. But they never found nothing wrong with it for 27 years. You know.
How long in total did you work at Fisher Body?
35 years and 3 months.
Doreen Howard, I wanted to go back to when you first hired in. Can you describe what the factory was like when you first hired in? What the environment was inside? You said you hired in to the paint department on the sealer line at
yes,
that time?
Yes, I did.
Describe what was it like? What was the environment like in there?
It was a lot of ladies and men's, and they worked together real good, and you'll always find some men don't want to help a lady, or I'll say a woman at least. But to me, it didn't make any difference. What race she was, anything, I'd help anybody. Because I used to go through in the paint department when I hired in, any job that anybody was having problem with, and if I was around, ask the LC. They called me LC. Say, ask the LC. And I would either train them or show them how to do the job. And then after I show them how to do the job, they'd look at me and thank me and say, thank you very much. And I had some women that This one lady, I guess say, but she, every third word that she cussed. And I didn't swear and cuss, and I didn't like to see a lady do that. And finally, I told her one day if she's going to cuss around me that much, I wouldn't like to talk with her, have a conversation with her. So when she told me later on, she said, I respect you for that, and said, I'll try not to cuss and swear around you. And she did. She honored it real good. You know, it was nice to work with her because I worked with her for about 15 years.
Mr. Sutter, in 1954, when you hired in here, and there were a lot of women there, was there a good mixture in terms of race and gender?
Not really. Not at all. When I hired in, they hired in 11 peoples, and I was the only considered black person at the group. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of places that they didn't hire black in.
As what place?
Such as the paint and the sealer, the cushion room. The most that the black that they had in there, I said most Negroes they had in there, was in what they call wet deck. Mm-hmm. It was where they wet sand the jobs, and they wore aprons and rubber boots. It wasn't a hard job, but it was in the water all day long. And I know some of the men, black and white, had looked like arthritis, and their hands would be like a wet all the time. But after 54, they seen that the black would just work better than some of the Caucasian or Spanish guys. And then after that, because they didn't have one black supervisor in there before I went on. But after I went off, then I had a better deal in the paint mixing room. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed that more, and I made more money. And I wasn't responsible for nobody but LC. Mm-hmm. Because when I was supervisor, I was responsible for 48 people. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of different characters to have to get along with.
How long were you supervisor?
I think about 6 months or more, somewhere along there. But I enjoyed it because the people that worked, and then they find out, people that knew I was a supervisor in the sealer room, everybody that knew me upstairs put in an application to transfer to work for me. So they took me in the office one day and asked me why everybody want to work for me. And all I told them was, well, I treat everybody like I want to be treated. And I said, I try to get along with everybody. Even the plant manager and all the higher up want to know why did everybody want to work for me. And I told them, I explained to them, I said, you're not working for me. I would only be your supervisor. You're working for General Motors. But they still want to come and work where I work. Funny, go ahead.
You were one of the first blacks in the paint department is on supervision?
I think I was the first or the second. I believe I was the first or the second.
Was there any minorities in any of the other departments?
Al Kelly was in third shift cleanup, what they call it, the maintenance. He was in that. And then I think after that, Cleve Stepter. Uh-huh. Came in. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was a big change going from
working
hourly to management.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like you transitioned fairly well, that the people accepted you.
Real well.
Transition.
They did, uh-huh.
Marilyn Coulter. During your time, when you hired in, were there any types of new hire pranks or jokes that they played on people when they were?
You know, in the department I was in, This is Lucy Sutter. The department I was in, we didn't have too many people that come in and they played jokes on them. Not as I know, at least if they did, they didn't do it around me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I was the type of guy, when I'm working, I never joke. And if I did drink, I didn't drink while I was working. If I go out to the tavern or the bar, I wouldn't want to go to the bar and drink my lunch hour or do, because I didn't believe in that, and I didn't do it. And but I knew a lot of guys that did do it, and they would come back in. We call it halfway juiced up, in other words, halfway drunk. And on their job, they would make a lot of mistakes. But after a while, I think some of them kind of didn't really quit, but they didn't drink as much during the lunch hour. Because mm-hmm. we had a lot of guys that go to the bar and spend their time at the bar. And when they come back, you can tell when people have had a little too much to drink because they get a little loud.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Doreen Howard. I want to go back to, can you describe the differences between when you first hired into the paint shop mm-hmm. to what it was like when you retired?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
some of the differences.
The different things was different was the really different. I would call is the you work 3 weeks. This is Lucy Sutter. Sort of, you work 3 weeks nights and 3 weeks days, and going from one shift to the other shift, you had a little problem, you know, say sleeping during the day because you wasn't used to it. But when you work days, you could sleep better at night. So it was quite a bit different before I retired because they had a straight shift. You work days or night. So now I mostly work days after I had the straight shift. And it was nice.
And as far, okay, you said that it started when you first hired in, they were on a swing shift.
This is Lucy said that when I went in, it was on swing shift
and
when
then,
I started.
Then you went to a straight shift.
Yes.
Do you have any idea what the time frame was? What year or any? Would that may have occurred?
You know.
Or what time?
This is Lou Sutter. I really kind of don't really know exactly what time, but it was in the 70s, I believe, close to 80s, that they went to straight shift.
So you went through quite a few years of working a swing shift, and you were married during this time frame. How did that affect your family and your family life?
Well, it really didn't affect it real, real bad because I worked and my wife stayed home with the kids for a long time till they all got in school. This is Lou Sutter. And I would spend a lot of time with my children, ride bicycle with them, I'd go to the games. Both of the sons played basketball and football. And I would go to their, attend their games. And it was really nice.
Now, when you went to a straight shift operation, now, were you on a day shift, or were you the afternoon shift?
I was a day shift.
And what were the hours of operation for the day shift?
For 8 hours, from 6:18 to 3:12. But a lot of days, we worked at overtime, an hour, 6 minutes, 12 minutes, half an hour. But I was in the group that when I went to the paint mixing, I worked from 5:18 to most of the time 4:18. I would work 10 hours a day. And a lot of days I would work that shift. And then, except Saturday or Sunday, I worked a lot of Saturdays and Sundays. And every New Year, I had to work. So, but they paid the good, you know, but I had to work every New Year's because what I was doing, my group was 11 of us, we had to get the paint ready for the start up after New Year's. The 2nd of January, we mostly start the 2nd or the 3rd. But whatever day that would fall on, we'd have to come in and mix paint all day and get it set up for the start of the shift.
And now, you talk about mixing paint. Describe, what is it to mix paint?
Mixing paint.
What do you do?
Okay. We'd have a what they call a tote tank. They bring it in from Flint, and it's about over 5,000 gallons. And we'd set it up on a ramp, and then we'd hook a hose to the back of it and let it go. We had a wall, like let it go through the wall into the mixing tank. And we'd put an agitator in the top of it to keep it stirred up. I'm going too fast.
No.
To keep it mixed up. We'll say if we run out of, and we mix it by the pound, we run out 300 or 400 pounds into the mixing tank, then we'd run like about 75 gallons of thinner in with it, and we turn the agitator on and mix it in one, and we get ready to ship it upstairs. We put it over to the what they call a running tank that pumps it upstairs. And that took quite a while, but it was enjoyable. Can I give you a story?
Sure,
story.
We like stories.
Before I retired, I was getting ready to retire, and I would never come back in like something happened, and they want a paint mixer or somebody to come back. If they called me, I could refuse to come in on the other shift. I had five guys to come in from Australia on nights, and they'll come in to see me, and they wanted to know everything about the paint. So when they asked the guys in the paint mixing, could they call me and I'd come back in, and they told him, said, he don't come back. He said, well, if we pay him, will he come back? Said, he don't come back for nothing. Said, once he leave here, he leave everything he do right here. So the Friday morning, the plane was leaving that Thursday night, but the Friday morning when I came in, they were still there. Because the paint mixer explained, said, if you want to see him, you got to wait till tomorrow. And they want to know, was it anybody else could explain the paint to them? And the guys that was in there told him, said, if you want to know everything, you'll have to ask him. So when I go in Friday morning, everybody in the shop knows somebody looking for me. Everybody said, there's five guys in here last night looking for you. I said, from where? They said, I don't know. I said, were the government men? They said, I don't know. So I said, where were they from? They said, we don't know. So in the morning, about 8 o'clock, they came in looking for me. And I had two little Caucasian guys. They called me Dad. And both of them would walk up to me anyway and kiss me and say, hi, Dad. So I didn't pay no attention, you know, but they just was, they loved me, really. When they hired in, I was their supervisor. And from that day on, they called me Dad. And the one little guy, he looked at him, he said, what the HELL you want with my dad? I was sitting over having coffee and a donut, reading the paper. And he said, well, we from Australia, and we come in and want to know about the paint. So when he said, oh, so there he is there. So they came over and introduced themselves to me. So now I asked him, I said, you from Australia? And they said, yeah. Said, they told us, we was in yesterday and they told us to come see you. But you had gone home. And said, we asked them, could we call you? Or could we, would you come in? They said, no. Said, we told them, if we pay you, would you come in? They said, no. Said, if you want to see him, you got to wait till tomorrow. I got one somewhere, honey. Anyway, so that morning I came in, I took him through the shop, through the paint mixer, and explained everything to him, and all five of them was writing. And when they got through the writing, they offered me a job in Australia. So when I just politely told them, I said, well, you're 5 years and 3 months too late. I'm retiring next month. And so the guys told me, said, here's our card. If you're ever in Australia, said, look us up and everything will be on us. But I haven't been to Australia yet. Been anywhere else, not to Australia. And I thought about that, and I was telling some people about it, and they would laugh and say, why did you go to Australia? I said, I've been here for 35 years and 3 months and retiring and going back to work. It wasn't nothing I wanted to do.
And no interest. So,
And after that, but the main thing, after they went through and they wrote down so much, and I gave them so many numbers, and they looked at me, and that's when they offered me a job and said, you give us all of this, and you didn't pull a piece of paper, a pad, or nothing out your pocket. And they want to know, how did you know, how you... I said, if you do something for 27 years, you ought to retain some of it up here. And so they laughed. And that's when they offered me a job. I said, well, they were just too late. Mm-hmm. But I said, I felt good, and it was nice for somebody to offer me a job, and was getting ready to retire. But it was great. I know I'm the only guy worked that fishy body. The people's working the line thought enough of to give me a surprise birthday party. Mm-hmm. And it was great.
Yeah. For which birthday?
For which birthday was it?
What birthday was it?
Huh?
Let's see, I retired at 57. I was 57. Because I'm going on 75 now. At 57 years old, they thought enough of me to give me a retired birthday party. And everybody in the shop knew that they give me one. And you know, sometimes you do things and other people will get jealous. So we had a guy in there that was in my group, and he had been there 44 years. He went downstairs and was complaining to the management that the people give me a surprise birthday party, and he'd been there 44 years, and they never give him one. So the people downstairs told him, said, yeah, we heard about that guy. I said, who is he? So he gave my name and everything. So they said, yeah, we heard about him. Say, Mr. So-and-so said, we can't do nothing about that. See, if these people thought enough of him, they work in the line, thought enough of him to take their money and give him a surprise birthday party, say, ain't nothing we can do about it. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of, it was nice, dude. It was really, really nice.
So were dinners and birthday parties something that they didn't do in the paint department much?
We had we had Thanksgiving dinner, and we had a Christmas dinner, but that was for everybody in it. But just to give one person a surprise birthday party had never been done before.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So your Thanksgiving dinner, things like that, were those like potlucks, or did they order food in? How did they do that?
They had a tray about 24 or 22 inches wide full of barbecue chicken and baked chicken, and they had a little everything, pops, you know. I was shocked. I didn't even know it, but when they did it, I had a little flatbed Kalamazoo truck that I rode around in, and I took my tools and wore them on the side. And when I get off of them, I take them off and lay them on my truck. And some of the other guys in there would take theirs off and lay them on the truck, and somebody would go by and take one and throw it in the trash. But I could go anywhere in the shop. All over the shop, they knew me and never bought my tools. And I would go someplace and they would have maybe a hose broke upstairs. They had like upstairs, because I'd be just riding around. I'd go up there sometime that where they put in the windshields. One of the hydraulic line would break where they was using a ear thing, and they had to get extra help to carry the windshields over to the cars are putting in. And the supervisor would ask me, could I fix this hose for him? And I would fix it probably about 5 seconds. And when the guy that they call maintenance come up and fix it, and when they get there, they'd be looking for it and say, why is the hose that broke? And somebody would tell them, oh, say, Lou was just about here, and he fixed it. And he had a little card about 3x10. Everything they do, they write it down. So if I be done to fix it, they'd take the card and just rip it up and throw it in the trash. But then some of them would call a committee man. So after they call a committee man, the rest of those guys would look down on him. Say, if Lou fix it, what's wrong with it? But I was just the person that if I could help anybody wherever I went, I would do it.
Mrs. Sutter, during your time that you were working on the line, were you ever laid off? And if so, were you ever laid off, or did you ever go on strike?
Well, when they laid off the whole, yes, I was laid off. I think I was laid off. My longest time was about 4 months, I believe. And I had an outside friend that worked for Eyeballs. And I think I worked down there for about 3 of the months with him.
And Eyeballs was?
Eyeballs Clothing Store.
It's the clothing store.
Yeah. And other than that, once I was laid off again for about, I think, 4 months when they had a strike. So when I had another friend that worked construction. And then I had another guy that him and I used to run together. He was inspector for the city. And he wanted me to come and work with him. But instead of going working with him, I set farm for a contractor, a cement.
Oh.
Other than that, I was so good to the man that owned the company. He had a son. And his son, we didn't get along because he was jealous of my setting farms was so much better than he could that his dad came to me and told me, he said, he won't be around you no more. I'm moving him. His father moved him away from around me because that's what would happen. I said, I probably would have took that hammer and hit him side the head. It would bother me. But it was nice that his father thought enough of me. And then after I told him I was going back to General Motors, he offered me a job guarantee with his company. And my mother had found out that his son and I had some words. And she told me, said, son, you go back to where you were, because blood is thicker than water. And he came to my house and cried and asked me to come back with him. Mm-hmm. But I told him I think it's better for I to go back to where I was. And so I went back, but that was in the early 60s. And I think I only had about 6 or 7 or 8 years in there. I had about 8 years. And so I went back, came back to General Motors, and stayed there for the rest of my time.
So how long had you worked before you became a paint mixer?
Oh, a paint mixer. I think I had worked about, 27, about 8 years.
You know, 8 years. Mm-hmm. And in that 8-year time span, it sounds as though the paint mix was a preferred job, yes?
Yes, it was.
What type of reaction did you get when you, being a African-American male, got that job back in those days? A preferred job such as that, was that well received by your coworkers?
Yes, it was.
Okay. So what were some of the big changes that you saw in terms of race and gender in the paint department over your long years of working there?
Well, it was, some of you, I would say, up and down, you know. Mm-hmm. You have different people do different things. And some people looked like could do anything, and they would let it go. But then some people that would, just to be truthful with you, some people would misuse the bathroom breaks.
And this was across the board?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then some of them, you didn't have no problem with them, no misusing the bathroom breaks. They would get a relief like 15 minutes, 10 minutes, or 12 minutes. But then some of them would use that for different things, and then they'd want a bathroom break. And some of them would misuse the bathroom break. But other than that, it was good to work with. A lot of people was good to work with. And the most jobs I worked on, I could do myself, not just for me. If you behind me or in front of me, I could do your job and the job I was doing too. I could really do that. Mm-hmm. And because I had he was a friend or a co-worker, and he went on supervision too. His name was Ray Dern. Mm-hmm. And Ray and I would get together sometime in spraying cars, and we would spray a 2.5 job if a guy wanted a break. Whoever wanted to smoke a cigarette or anything, mm-hmm. him and I would work our job and another half of another man's job, and he'd do the other half. We could do that, mm-hmm. but a lot of people wouldn't do it, but him and I didn't mind because he was a tall guy, mm-hmm. and long arms, and when we were spraying, if I didn't watch him, the hole in the floor of the car, he'd take and cut his air hole off and scoop through there and spray my shoes. He'd load my shoes up with paint. And when I found out he's doing it, he'd turn his back on me. And when he's turning his back, I'd go up and down his back with my hole, my paint. And so... But it was all in fun. We never had any argument about anything. Afterward, we would laugh and they'd have to play clean jokes like on one another. We didn't never get in a fist fight or anything or nothing mm-hmm. like that. This was just something that we enjoyed doing because mm-hmm. we were both young and about 20-something years old. I think about it now, you know what? We would laugh so hard until... the other people that working with us, a lot most of them was older than we were, they would laugh with us about because we could get away with it. And when their supervisor came in, he'd be loaded with paint, or either my shoes loaded with paint, or pant legs and thing. And he said, "How'd you get all that paint on you?" And I looked across at my partner, and his name was Ray. I said, "Ray sprayed me. What did he do that for?" "Oh, he just wanted something to do." And we'd let it go. It was really nice. We had a lot of good workers and good sprayers and good painters.
So when you say you sprayed paint, was there a particular part of the job that you paint that you sprayed? What were you spraying? What were you spraying when you say you were spraying paint?
We would have to spray, say, either round the door, the front of the car, and open the door up and spray the inside of the door. And now the two doors was easy to spray, but the four doors was that you had to be a little quicker. We had certain spots, and then we'd have to spray the underneath the trunk lid, which was a little different. But now, say, him and I was just spraying around the edge of the windshield and the doors in the back of the windshield. And then a lot of time we'd have to spray edge of the wheelhouse. Mm. And it was certain spots of the car you had to spray because you had to, in color, you had to change your hose for different colors of cars. But you know, when after doing it so long, after I got out on the line, I was mixing the paint, they would run like what they call blocks. A block is like about 29, one color, or either 50 or 60 or 70 of one solid color. And that made it real easy for the guys that were doing the paint because they wouldn't have to change the holes so often. And it was something to, really, it was nice to see. If you've never been in there, you never worked there, anybody that drives a car, if they get a chance just to go and see what it is, to, because at this time when I was working there, started there, they didn't have the roll bars. The roll bars came in just before I retired, some part of them. And we had a, but they, you know, they had a overhead sprayer and a side sprayer. But whoever was working next to that had to change the holes for it to run through there. And then they got the computer. When we got the computer, I was still working there. And this guy on the desk outside, he'd punch it in from out there, and the machine would do it himself. And that was really something to see.
From so the they went from the
manual,
story,
from manual.
From a manual spray. And how many people do you think were in a booth spraying at that time compared to when you saw the automation come in? How many people
eliminated about 15 or about 16 people. Before that, it would be about 24 people in there. Be about 12 on each side. And when they got the computers in there, it eliminated about 80% of the workers.
Now, how big is this booth that you're talking about? To have 24 people in, it'd have to be quite large.
It ran about 28 to 30 feet long. Say, at least 28 to 30 feet long or more. It was quite large.
So that would have been crowded, fairly crowded then, to have that many people in there.
It wasn't. It might have been longer than that, but it was long. If like each side would have about 12.
Oh, okay.
So, and they'd be spaced out like a little different. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they had like a, you had like about, you know, each one would have about 6 to 8 feet. That you worked in. So that, no, it's more than 20 something feet.
It was very, very large.
It was about, yeah, probably 38 or 40 feet or maybe 50. It's
so
quite long.
Now, you said in the beginning when they did the manual spraying that they would change colors, like one car would come in and be black, the next one would be white. So they would have to change their hoses in between each vehicle.
Uh-huh.
And then as when the automation came in, is that when they went to the block painting?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that helped to reduce quality issues? Is that what
It really, it actually, all it did was reduce the labor.
Okay.
Because it wasn't as many people. Reduced the labor real. And we had a guy in there, and he was looking at the robot, and some supervisor wanted somebody to look at it. So when he asked him, he said, what do you think about that? That'd take care of 5 men. He said, yeah, that's nice. And he said, but that robot don't buy no car.
Mm-hmm.
So when they went to automation, it reduced the number of employees in there. And also at that time, they went to the block painting.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And they went to that, I assume, because it was easier for someone to not have to change the robot's programming after
mm-hmm.
a single vehicle versus maybe 10 or how many other vehicles that they would program to spray one
mm-hmm.
particular color?
They ran in a block, they ran at least 28 to 70.
Okay.
So you have quite a while of one color going through. And it made it, it was convenient for the workers because they didn't have to change the hoses. The hose would be hanging on the wall. You reach back and get that number. And you have a certain area to spray it. And you have so many feet to spray it, the time to spray it in. And they would run like 60 jobs an hour, one job a minute. and then sometimes it'd be 52 jobs an hour. You know.
Not only was Marilyn Coulter, not only was automation and paint changing constantly, the name, Fisher Body, BOC, Lansing constantly changed. What's your reaction to the changes? How did it affect you? How do you view the plant? What do you call it?
Well, I was always used to Fisher Body, but I think when I retired, they had it all was GM. I really didn't pay that much. It really didn't concern me that much, I put it that way. It really didn't concern me that much, but to me, it was always a place where they built cars. And there was, sometime I would go out into to the layout where they have, I had a lot of time, really, on my job after I was mixing paint, because a lot of time I wouldn't have to do nothing within 2-3 hours or more, and I had a lot of time to kill, and I'd go out and see why they are starting to build the next model, and you'd be surprised at how much work and how many peoples is in this of building a new body, a new style, I say. It was a new style. Say the next year, they would have to go through a period of time, say at least 4 or 5 or 6 months to get this body style that they want for the next year. And I just enjoyed looking at everything they have it on the wall and on the tables. And I'd go and just look at it and see. And they would have every spot well numbered in there, like the number of spot wells on that body. They'd have all of them numbered. And it was looked like a Chinese checkerboard. But it was really, really something to see.
Doreen Howard, I'd like to go back to what you were describing earlier about paint, the paint mixing, and the some of the procedures and steps that you did during that. You talked about these huge trucks coming in with paint, and then you mixed them with a solvent.
A thinner.
Uh-huh. And you actually put a color. Is that why you were mixing the paint? You actually went in there and put the certain amounts of each color to come out with XYZ color one at the other end?
No. They would bring it in what they call a toll tank. Okay. And they'd have a number on it. If it's 22, it's blue.
Okay.
And if it's 40, it's white. And it's what it is, the paint is in the toll, but we would have to mix thinner in it to get it where we could spray it out of the gun.
Oh, because it was thickening.
It was thickening,
Oh, okay.
And that's why in the top of it we had like a, what they call an agitator, and it run by air. And we put the, over take the top off and drop this agitator down in the top of it and put this
Like a big blender?
Agitator. It was small. You'd be surprised. Mm-hmm. Probably about 10 inches round.
Okay.
But it had like a bottom of it, had blades on it, mm-hmm. and had a little cup around it. We put it in there, and we would agitate it for about 10 or 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And then when we pump it out into a mixing tank, we would take and pump out like from 300 to 400 pounds of it. We'd mix it by the pound. And then we would add about 60 pounds or 75 pounds of thinner, what they call it. It was called a 6202 of thinner to mix it so that that would, because when it comes in, it's real thick like. And we'd mix it by the pound. And then when we get it, mix it up, we put in a tank on the other side that we mix it in. They had two tanks. One would pump it upstairs through the line, and wouldn't believe it, but the line would be about 32 miles. But you, through this, you wouldn't think of that much room in there for where the line would go.
That's and what then, I was wondering, how it got
from the mixing.
Because the paint mix area is not anywhere near where the
what paint they're using.
Where they actually painted at in, right. in the facility.
It's a long ways. And we pump it up through the line, and it had a up pump. You pump it through the line and then return or turn back, because you couldn't just let it sit. If it sit, then it would dry. Like, you had to keep it turning, keep it moving, going up and coming back, and it come back in the same paint in the tank.
Now, is that why that? Because you said you worked just horrendous amounts of hours. Did you have to come in so much earlier in order to get the paint flow and have it to the area where they needed it by the time that the other employees for the paint department came in and used it to spray? Is that why you had to come in so much earlier?
Right. We come in early enough to mix up the paint, all the different colors of paint, which was 13, to make sure that we got enough in the tank for them to start with.
To start.
Okay. But then after, when they started running the blocks, we had it made, you would say, because we look on the, either on the computer or on the sheet. Every shift would leave the other note, and we'd know what's running first, what color's running first. And we'd mix that up, and then we'd take our time with the rest of it. And it was very easy. But you know, you have to really, to me, some people don't mind reading and studying. And they would send us to school one day a month and 1 week a year, but they pay us for it. And I never did turn it down, but a lot of guys, they would go to school and go to sleep. But wherever I went, I always read everything that they put in front of me. And it was a job, if you wanted to do it and do it right, you could enjoy it. Because they are what we use some high thinner to clean the lines with. Actually, we use ether, but then 99% of the people in the job didn't know that we use ether down there. And when we was using it, I was the only one that wasn't afraid of it. Because I would put a Scott pack on, put on a rubber apron, rubber gloves.
Scott pack is what, please?
Is an air conditioner. Not air conditioner. It's really like a breathing. So
a
you
breathing
would breathe
tank.
It. Mm-hmm. Breathing tank. Mm-hmm. And I didn't mind using it. And I read up on it and know how to handle it. The main thing, when we get into something dangerous, we don't read the instructions before we start using it.
So, Maryland Culture, so your job was, number one, sounds like it was very dangerous. Number two, sounds like you worked in a authorized personnel only area, correct?
Correct.
So you had to have special training in order to be down in the paint mix area.
Right. You have to have the training or somebody in there know what they were doing to use it. Because I had two brothers to work in there with me. And there was Beauchamp Larry, and one name was Larry. I forget the younger name anyway. But they worked in there with me, and when we would use ether, they would they'd just go out and ask me, did I need any help? And I'd tell them no. I said, I know what I'm doing. I said, best for you to go out. And with the Scott pack on, it's like a air blowing through here all the time. I was getting fresh air. And then when we pump it back out, I would put a tow tank and pump it back down through the line and hook the line up to back in the old tow and let it pump in the tow tank. And then take about probably 30 minutes to get about a 5,500 tow tank full back. And then we would put a tag on it and set it outside. And some truck would come in and haul it away. Now, where they hauled it, we didn't know, and we didn't ask. Mm-hmm. but we didn't ever leave it inside. We closed it up tight and set it outside.
Doreen Howard. You said it was called a Scott pack? Is that what that, the apparatus, the protective equipment?
It was like an oxygen tank.
So
just put, you strap it on your shoulder, uh-huh. and you had a little turner on it, and you turn it up to get as much air you want coming out through you.
So it was a confined space that you were in?
To use it.
In order to use that?
Yes, it was.
And you said for the most part you were in there alone?
Well, I would be in there alone. Mm-hmm. But the guys knew I was in there.
Okay.
And they...
keep an eye on you?
Oh, yeah. If I went out in, say, 15 or 20 minutes, they would come around and look mm-hmm. and check.
Now, I can recall when I worked in the paint department, they talked about a button, some kind of a button that if the person who was inside, they would push some button and make the paint drop or something to that effect so that they could, and they had so many seconds to get out of that confined space. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure what it was all about.
That's in case of fire. 45 seconds. You had 45 seconds to get out. Mm-hmm. And they used to tease me about it. And we had a big old forklifter in there.
Okay. Now, so that was used for, in case of a fire. Was fire something that would occur? Did that ever happen during your time there?
Not while I was there. A fire never occurred. But we had a young engineer to come in and didn't know what he was doing. And what he did, he pushed the button twice. And when he pushed that button, the door was locked. And the ox eye is a big tank sitting outside. They call that ox eye. And what it does, it would come in and smother everything. And couldn't nobody breathe in there. If you're still in there, you couldn't breathe. But you had 45 seconds to get out. And the doors would automatically lock. And when they talked to me about it, I tell them, I say, you see that electric truck up there? I say, it won't kill that. I say, but if it ever happened, I'm making me a new door through that block wall over there. I'm going out through that door with that big truck. Make me a new door. I'm getting out of here. And they just laugh and say, well, you got nerve. I say, well, no, I'm just particular about what I can do to get out. Mm-hmm. But it just so happened when he did it, wasn't anybody in there. And he punched the button twice. What they was doing, they was going to bring him down there as a supervisor. But after that, hey, we said, no, we don't want this young fella. Not in here. If he don't know what he doing, and just punching button because they up there. And there was a big red button about 5 inches around. He didn't know what it was. He didn't read it, didn't look at it, nothing. He just punched it. And it shut everything down. And so, you know, I don't know what they did with him, but they sent him to school for engineer. But this is what he come in and did. And after he did that, I didn't see him anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, if they did something like that and you say it shuts everything down, everything meaning just the paint mix area, or did it affect the whole entire paint department or the whole plant? How far
it just,
reaching was mm-hmm. this particular?
It would just shut the paint department down.
Just the uh-huh. paint department alone.
Uh-huh. Paint department alone. Everything, it would kill everything. In other words, it just smothered it. And it was like a foam coming out of a place that they had in there. It was like a white foam, and what it did, it just smothered everything. Because mm-hmm. the fire won't burn unless you get air. Mm-hmm. So this is what it would do.
Mm-hmm. So like Marilyn was saying earlier, that it was a very dangerous job. If you didn't know what you were doing and you didn't have the correct training. And so you said that the training was ongoing.
It was, yes. The training was ongoing.
The whole time you worked there, you had to continually be retrained on
for the 27 years I worked in there. I would go to school one day a month. They would send me to school one day a month and 1 week a year. Mm-hmm. And everything that come in, I would read it. And I would read up on everything. We had some a thinner. It was 60-01. We couldn't use we had to use brass tools to open it up. And anything we did around it, we always had to have a brass screwdriver, a brass channel locks, a brass a wrench to open it up. Because a spark from any kind of a tool would set it off. Mm-hmm. And see, these are things that you should read up on. And the main thing was, they furnished us the tools. We didn't have to buy the tools. They furnished us the tools.
Doreen Howard again. Now, during your time there, did the paint system stay the same, or did anything ever change as far as the paint or the way in which it was mixed or the type of chemicals that you used, or was that pretty much consistent during the whole time that you worked there?
The whole time I worked there, it was the mixer that you, the chemical, actually the thinner that you use, some of it would call, some of the paint, would, you'd have to use more thinner in different one. Because if you didn't, if you got it too thin, and when you sprayed it on the job, on the car, it ran like a water was in it or something. And another thing, some of it was a little heavier. You use it a little heavier. And in some areas, you could spray it a little heavier. Like on the roof and the hood and the side of the cars and the trunk. Now, around the doors, you could spray it a little heavier around the doors because it would stay a little better.
So each color had its own
number.
Viscosity, is that what
right,
they call
uh-huh.
it? And then each area of the car also had different paint viscosities, also depending on where they were spraying it and
right.
how much paint they want on it.
Uh huh.
So, in that, I just kind of moving away from how to paint a car a little bit. What would you say? I know you said that you had a surprise birthday party. Was that your best memory in the plant? Or what was your best memory of the plant?
I think probably my birthday, because was the best memory of the people that I didn't know that knew me. I really didn't know that everybody in the plant knew me. And to find out that you work at a place this many years and everybody knew you, and they all give me respected me, like, because most of everyone in there that knew me knew I went to church and knew I was a type of guy that would try to do anything to help anybody that was asked. Wasn't anybody in there that asked me something, and if I could help them or tell them, I did.
Now, you said that you were at church. I know that they had Bible study groups and things like that. Did you participate in those groups at work?
Yes, I did. I really did. And we had a Bible class during a lunch hour, because our lunch hour was, most of the lunch hour was 42 minutes. And for the 42 minutes, we would sit down in certain areas with certain people that wanted to have it, and we'd have our lunch. And why we were there, because I used to go to different places in the shop where they had the Bible class during lunch hour. Mm. And
So they had them in pot, body, paint, trim?
Everywhere in there. Uh-huh. Different peoples and different peoples in it. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you treat peoples right, mm-hmm. treat them like you want to be treated, everybody in different places would somehow or another you get known mm-hmm. that this is who he is or who they are. Mm-hmm. And they were just, it was really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. So,
I had a question. Doreen Howard again. Earlier you talked about your son, and you had a son that worked there. Did you encourage your family to come to work for General Motors?
I really didn't. His idea was that he wanted a job, and he didn't want to go to school. Now, my oldest daughter, she went to school in Missouri. And the youngest one, he had a scholarship for UCLA, a four-year scholarship, and when he got to California. But the son that worked there, he took up aviation, and he finished school in that, went to down Lansing Community. And he wanted a job in there. And I turned his name in, and he come in 2 days after high school, and but the youngest one, since he had an offer for UCLA, he went to UCLA right after high school, and I think it was 1970. Let's see, he was born in 1978.
Okay. He went to school with your son.
With Lavelle? Rodell. Oh, did you?
Yeah.
And he went to... So he flew out to California. My wife had two sisters lived in Inglewood, and a brother lived up in Baldwin Hill. And he didn't want to go. He wouldn't go to UCLA. Mm-hmm. He wanted to go to USC. And, you know, things work out for you, I guess, right. I had a first cousin I'd never seen before till 98. And she taught at USC. And retired from USC. And I met her in 1998 when my son out there, his son was graduating from high school. And she's up in the stand, and she lives in Sacramento now. But I got to meet her in 98. And she told me after I told my son we met her that she would have got him in school free if she'd have known. But we had never met and didn't even know one another.
Like that.
Uh-huh. And then to turn around, his two daughters started the school at USC for smart kids. Even so now one of them is 13 now, and she's in the 8th grade. And they told us they didn't have to pay nothing. And they still don't have to pay nothing, but they have to transfer them home from home back and forth to school.
So now, does your son that worked here in the plant, does he still work at Fisher Body?
He worked at General. He transferred to Doraville, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And he's still working at Doraville. I think he's got about 28 years. Mm-hmm. But he called and told me that they was going to close in 2008. Mm-hmm. But so he was going to school for management. So he signed up to go back and finish his schooling. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And the one in California, he's got 3 degrees. I said, what you doing with 3 degrees anyway? But he said, well, Dad said, the more you know, the better chance you have. Mm-hmm. And he's been on the force for 15 or 16 years. Mm-hmm. And he's been in different places. And he's a...
couple more.
During your time in the paint mix area, you said you had a lot of hours of free time. Was there anything in particular that you did during that time when you had, you know, 2 or 3 hours to do what you wanted to do?
Well, I'd go take a nap.
Okay.
Sorry to put that
first,
on there. But
first order of business. Mm-hmm. Hey.
Could you sometime, go rest?
Mm-hmm, sometime I would take a nap. And we had places that was off limit to just working people. And to tell it now, I guess it won't hurt. We had 8 beds in there. And I would go get in the best bed. Mm-hmm. I always got in the best bed. And the guys in there knew me. So when they wouldn't do no work while I'm sleeping out of there. If I go to sleep, I'd get on a bench. We had a couple of flaps, one go on this side and one go on the head. And I'd get on there, and some people would come in to fix a gun or a hose. And he would get on the vise and start opening up. And the guy sitting there, he said, "What you fixing to do?" I said, "I'm fixing to repair this hose here." He said, "No, not here." He had to go by about 150 feet. So you have to go up to the other end. He said, "Why?" He said, "Louis sleep under there." And they knew who I was, so they just going up there. I didn't even know it had been there. Come in and repair the gun, do the same thing. He said, "Louis sleep under there." And I had a friend to work at Old's, and he come in here looking for me for at least 15 or 20 years and never found me. I would either be up on the floor, and we had a, what you call a 55-gallon, call it ear thing. It's a, what you stick the windshield, the sealer that you seal the windshield in with. And so they called me in one day and they're having a meeting. They were shipping back like from 17 to 18 half drums. And I forget the price of them, but it was a heck of a price on them. And they asked me, called me into a special meeting, like, they asked me, what about the pumps? That pumps, they had all the millwrights in a meeting I was in. And the pump they had in there was what you call a hydraulic pump, but a hydraulic pump could be any pump. But this kind, when the pump go down, it pumped the material out, and when it went up, it pumped the material out. It pumped it out both ways. And most of the millwrights didn't know what it was. And so they had me in there, and the Wheaton was in there, the plant manager. And he said, it do what? I said, pump the material both ways, and some of the guys, you know, you're going to get some smart guys in there. I don't know, what you mean it pump both ways? And I said, "You a millwright, you ought to know." And I told him, I said, "All these guys you got sitting around here, don't none of them know how it worked?" And nobody said they knew. And there was another guy named Mike, Big Mike I called him. So I always got along really good with Big Mike. He was a millwright. And he said, "Lou," said, "how does it work?" He said, I said, "Mike, all these guys sitting." I said, "What are they paying all these guys for? I ain't getting paid for it." I said, "These guys getting paid for to fix these and repair them and know how they work?" And so the plant manager asked me, he said, "Well, Lou, you know how it worked?" I said, "Yeah, I know how it worked." He said, "Well, what? How does it work?" And I explained to him, I said, "It pumps the material both ways. And the material, when you put it on the car, it could sit there for a week on that round that windshield. Mm-hmm. And you put the windshield in there, it'll stick. But when it's in the drum and you open it up and let the air to it, it plugs up. It won't pump no more. The material ain't working. It won't pump no more." Mm-hmm. So they asked me to take care of it. I said, "Take care of it?" I said, "Yes." I said, "We'll pay you." I said, "Anytime something go wrong with it," I said, "we'll, if we call you in. If you stay here an hour or 2 hours, we'll double your time. If it's a holiday, we'll triple your time." So I took care of it for a long time, and they didn't have no trouble. But they were sending back like 17 and 18 drums back to the company that they had opened it up and let the air hit it. And when the air hit it, it just runs it. It wouldn't pump out.
Mm-hmm. Skim over.
Uh-huh. It would skim over and everything, and it was thick, and it wouldn't pump out. Mm-hmm. And then when they did put on the windshield, it wasn't sticking. wouldn't hold a windshield like it should. So and then when I got ready to retire, they asked me to train three more guys how to do it. So and I took Stan McNeely and two more guys up there every time I changed it, because you had to lay it on the floor and roll it, put on a roller, and you could roll it for a week and it still wouldn't hurt it, no matter how long you want to roll it. And I explained to them that you can't let the air hit it. You got to make sure you put the top back on it and keep it flowing through the holes back in and out of the, if it's a week or weekend. But anyway, these guys that was in this, and when I told them that you got all these guys, what you paying them for? All of them looked at me and turned red. Excuse me, honey, I didn't mean to hum, but they looked at me and turned red. I want to know how did I know how it worked. And I told him, I said, I read it. You guys do something, you don't read everything you do. You just take it for granted that you know how to do it, you know. So I had read up on it. And then after that, they didn't have, when they send their drawing back, they didn't have nothing in it but a little thinner, you know, to wash them out. So they, but they paid me, you know, I didn't mind it. You know.
As you get closer to that, I wanted to know, I know you told me that you still keep in touch with some of the people that you made as friends here, yes?
Mm-hmm.
And what are some of the things that you do with the people outside of here?
Well, some of them, one or two of them, we go to the same church, mm-hmm. and we just go to church together, and mm-hmm. when we have a dinner or something at church, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's nice to have somebody to talk to and visit.
Mm-hmm.
And but a lot of them that I fish and hunt with have already passed. You know, they're gone. Mm-hmm. And but the one that I know now, just go to church and do, because
okay.
some of them play golf,
mm-hmm.
which I don't, but I could should have.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them take vacation, and they are. Wanna, you know, some people will ask you, how can you go to California and Arizona and stay 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
And so they want to know how I do it. I said, I just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you work 35 years and you're drawing nice pay.
Mm-hmm.
And is that running?
Yeah.
So it's just a few of them that I do know that's retired like I am. And I don't know why they try to live above their means or what, but you know, you can adjust to anything if you're willing to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I haven't did any kind of job for pay since I've been out. And it's been 89, and this has been be 16 years this month, you know.
That's wonderful.
That's good.
Now, before you left, I know that you said that you were a supervisor, but did you ever get involved with the union activities or in the union, or did you have any dealings with the union?
Oh, yeah.
What types of things did you do for the union?
Well, when you go in there, they tell you, you don't hit a supervisor or you don't steal. I had a young man that was working, but I was his supervisor. And him and his mother-in-law worked there. And he was stealing wires, you know, like electric wires.
Mm-hmm.
And when I took him to the office, they asked him what was he doing with his wires. He first said he wasn't doing it. Then he said, asked him, what you be doing with the wires? And he said, wind up my garage. And that was all I had to do. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And they fired him.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on they asked me what kind of work it was, and I told him he was a good worker. I hate to see him get fired. He had mm-hmm. a wife and two kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him I hate to see him get fired for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because he could have took a one paycheck and bought all the wires he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And but then his mother-in-law came up to me afterward and told me, she said, Lou, I don't blame you for him getting fired. Mm-hmm. She said, I blame him. Mm-hmm. So I hope you don't hold that against me that I think I'm blaming you. I told her, I thank you, but I told her I just felt like it was bad for him to get fired with a wife and two kids. And she said, well, he didn't use the good judgment. So I told her that's true. Because he could have, the wives he was stealing mm-hmm. wasn't worth his job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But other than that, I didn't have no problem out of. Well, I had one more guy that he drank a lot.
Uh-huh.
And what I did, I took him in the office, mm-hmm. and didn't nobody want him.
Mm-hmm.
And he had 20-something years there.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Hank. We called him Hank. And I took him in the office, Maryland, and I sat him down. I told him, I said, Hank, I got a job to do, and you got a job to do. Mm-hmm. And I said, I would appreciate it while I'm your supervisor. Mm-hmm. I really would appreciate it mm-hmm. if you didn't go out and drink at lunchtime mm-hmm. and while you're working for me and mm-hmm. So he got up and shook my hand, and he told me, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
He said, While I work for you, I won't take another drink during lunch hour. And he didn't.
That's good.
So the supervisor that he was working for mm-hmm. before and afterward, they asked me, what did I tell him mm-hmm. that he stopped drinking? And I told him, I didn't have to tell him. He told him. He cussed him out and then told him, so he'd treat me like a man.
Mm-hmm.
And which I did,
mm-hmm.
and say he told him, say, I respect that.
Mm-hmm.
So he talked to me like a man and treated me like a man. But the rest of them had dog tanked out. I mean, they really, I felt sorry for him. You know,
mm-hmm.
they would give him 3 days off and a week off mm-hmm. because he would drink so mm-hmm. much. But I think he stayed there long enough to retire. I'm not for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, that's the only thing that I felt bad about mm-hmm. while I was there.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you attend union meetings when you were a member?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get involved in any of the committees or anything over the years of working here?
No, I didn't. Mm-mm. I just when I worked in Chicago, I was a committee man. I was a welder then, and I had a. Things that happened in that shouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. But I was young and didn't care what I said, and mm-hmm. would threaten to whoop anybody to get up in my face because I was in a gang, really. Mm-hmm. I was in a bad gang then.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us carried guns. You know, and I tell people, my mother prayed for me when I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I haven't carried any guns since I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
No more when I go hunting. But I haven't hunted now in probably 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I still have guns, but I don't use them for nothing. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But now they're just collectibles,
though. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
More or less.
Mm-hmm.
Did you participate in any of the union-sponsored activities, any of the programs, the picnics, or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I still do. Yeah. And mm-hmm. my wife likes to go out to Eagles, out to Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, we was going out to Park Lake, wasn't it? Out on a good
Hollow, Sleepy Hollow.
Sleepy Hollow, yeah. Mm-hmm. Out to Sleepy Hollow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. As we wrap it up here, can you say what's your most appreciated bargained benefit?
For General Motors?
Mm-hmm. As an employee of General Motors, a member of UAW,
yeah.
What are some of your most appreciated bargain benefits?
I think with the holiday pays, and there used to be, they gave us those extra days that you could have a doctor appointment, a dentist appointment, and get
personally paid holidays.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought that was real nice.
Mm-hmm.
And the vacation pay. Because mm-hmm. once I took a vacation once and I went to Hawaii and my wife wouldn't go and my youngest son wouldn't go. So I went with another couple and their two kids, you know. But you know, I had a good time, you know. Other than that, I used to take, my children was growing up, wherever vacation my wife and I would take, I'd always take the kids. Mm-hmm. She didn't want to take them all the time, but I would. Mm-hmm. I would tell her, I said, no, if the kids can't go, we don't need to go. Mm-hmm. The three children, you know, they always went with us. Mm-hmm. And the one named Johnny, I'd like to leave about 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And wherever I'm going, you know, like the next day, about 11 or 12, I'd be there. You know, I look back through the back glass, and the rest of them would be asleep. His little head would be sticking up back there in the middle of the glass, and he'd read the map for me. He was only about 6 or 7 years old. Mm-hmm. He could read the map. I showed him how to read the map, and he would always read the map, and the others would sleep all the way. But Johnny would stay awake. I remember once, my dad had a brother that was in World War I, and he lost one of his lungs overseas, and he lived in Denver, Colorado. So I took my father out there to see him, like, you know, 77. And I was driving through Nebraska. It was an electric storm. And my wife was asleep. And two of the kids were asleep. My dad was awake. You know, it was lightning so bad till the lightning was just lightning going right down the highway. I didn't really have to use my lights, but I left them on. And I looked back through the mirror, up in the mirror there, there's Johnny, little head sticking up back there. He was something. And whenever I get to where I'm going, he'd go to sleep and sleep most of the first day. But it was nice because he paid attention. Mm-hmm. And if the rest of them were asleep, he was awake. It was really good. And when he got up big enough, your children won't follow you after 14 mm-hmm. and 15 years old. They won't go with you if they can. But they were about seven and eight years old. And Mel and I used to had a pickup and I had a camper on the back of it. And I used to take different guys with me. Marsha, Mo, Louis Thornton, Jordan, and different guys that would go up and kind of with me fishing. Mm-hmm. And I had a boat. I still got the boat. I was trying to give it away. And I gave it to a guy. He haven't come got it. A 15-foot fiberglass with a 50-horse Mercury on it. But, I haven't fished with it since in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And I used to go up there and stay a week. I took them to two boys, and my wife would go once in a while. And but they'd go up there and go shopping. And the daughter, she went once. Anyway, the two boys would go with me. We went up there once with Jordan. And we come back with 92 pounds of bluegills. I mean, a lot of fish.
Doreen Howard again. I wanted to go back to your time in the paint mix department. And you said that it was quite a hazardous job as far as the chemicals and the things that you worked with. Mm-hmm. And you talked a little bit about the personal protection equipment that you had to wear. Did you ever have any problems with other health issues or being around the chemicals? Or did anybody you work with ever have any problems associated with being around those chemicals? I know other people that would just walk into the paint department, you would get hit with the fumes of the paint, mm-hmm. things like, did you ever have any problems being around the chemicals?
No, I didn't. You know what I did was, Doreen, you know what I did? Whenever I went in the morning, I always had a jar of Vaseline. I'd take and oil my nose real good up in my nose and keep it in there. And I put on a little, maybe sometime I put on a little mask. And I would put a little grease on my face, around my ears and things. And every day I'd do that. And then when I'd come out, we had a room, like you said, off limit to anybody, you know, couldn't anybody come in. And we had coffee and newspaper and radio. I'm telling you now, we had a TV in there, had a refrigerator.
Just like
had,
home.
Mm-hmm. We had a crock pot, had a skillet, electric skillet. And when I go in there, I take the soft tissue and blow my nose and wipe it off my face every day. And then we had a trash can with the top on it. I drop it in there. But the most of the people come in, their nose is dry, and their ears is dry, and their face. And they didn't use no protection or nothing. But I had read in there, like in some of the reading I had read, to keep the Vaseline up your nose. And what that would do, it'd keep them soft. And if you smelled anything like that, it didn't go right in through your nose or something. Or anyway, I found out that really, really helped me every day, and I never had any problem with it. But some of the guys, I know some of the guys, like they would have a breathing, after they quit, they had breathing problem because they had inhaled so much of that stuff. And I would use the, they had like a cleaner to rub over our hand, like a soap light or something. It's kind of a grayish looking and a bunch of it. And I'd rub that over my hand and wash my hand with soap and warm water. But that's the only thing I think that helped me, that I tried to protect myself in there. And I wore long sleeves. I didn't ever go in without long sleeves. I didn't wear short sleeves in there.
So you exposed as little skin as possible to the solvents.
Right, that's what I did, uh-huh. I didn't expose it. And I always wore a cap on my head. Mm-hmm. Because... before I retired, they'll furnish everything, if even furnish my shoes, everything but my socks and underclothes, you know. They furnish the coveralls. And we got like a 5-pair coveralls a week. You didn't have to go in and put on the same one you had on yesterday. And that, and I think that helped me a lot, because I never so far, you know, my birthday, I'll be 75 years old, and I still haven't had a breathing problem or anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything that you wanted to talk about at all that we have not talked about before we wrap up here?
Not really.
There's only one thing I really want you to ask. You said that you had a discussion with one of the plant managers about your work ethic. You want to share that?
One of the plant managers?
You said something about he knew that you were a good worker or something like that.
Well, he had heard about me, yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the plant managers, I think it was the one that died. You know, the one had a heart attack. I forget his name now. But he said that he had heard about me, but he had never had a conversation with me. And he wished he'd got to know me better. Because there was a time when I was in the paint mixing for 20-something years, if any color go wrong on the night shift, they didn't bother fixing it. Mm-hmm. They sprayed the cars and they repaired them the next day. But they had a log upstairs. I was supposed to read it every day, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. I had the two little guys that I was telling about called me Dad because it was 21 steps to go up there. Mm-hmm. And one of them would go up there and they'd come back. And I say, they said, Lou, they didn't call me Lou. They said, Dad, they said it so and so and so and so, the paint was bad in the morning. And so when they went up, but I would tell them, I said, when you go up and read it, just put LCS on there. Mm-hmm. LSC on there, that's my initial, like, you know. And they would sign it. Mm-hmm. And everybody thought I was reading, but I never went up. They questioned me about it because I wouldn't go up and sign it. And so I told him, if you leave it down here, I'll sign it, but I ain't going up them stairs just to sign that. And they said, why? I said, it's too many stairs. I ain't walking up there. I done already come up and downstairs. Mm-hmm. I said, I ain't going up there to sign that. I said, and one name was Pat and Jimmy. Either one of them would go up there. They go read it. One of them would read it every morning. And they come back and tell me what paint's bad. And I would go in and fix it. And then as a time when they wanted a special paint job, I would mix three colors of paint. Then I put what they call stones, grind up stones. Mm-hmm. Stones in it. You see these colors look like they got little sunshine against it. It's just sparkling light. That's a special color. Mm-hmm. And if you get that, it costs you $200 extra just for the paint job. Mm-hmm. I would do that. And it was good because I'd take my time and mix it up. I didn't have to mix about 5 gallons and mix it up, and they'd go up and paint a 42 color was red, either 22 was blue. Mm-hmm. They wanted most like was the blue car or the red, and some of the green. Mm-hmm. They want that in it. And the car do look real good, and like the sun hit it, just a little spark of light coming. Mm-hmm. So I did that. And what else did I do? Oh, yeah. And I was supposed to go through every morning and check the viscosity of all the paint. Mm-hmm. So I gave that job to Jimmy. Little Jimmy, I called him. Jimmy would go through every morning and check that, and he'd come back and tell me what's, if they need thinner or paint to it, he'd tell me what's wrong. They write on it. The log upstairs, what paint's bad. Mm-hmm. And the night shift never fixed it. And they always depended on me to do it. And so I would do it, and I didn't mind.
Mm. Well, we really appreciate you being a great worker and a good inspiration to the people around you. Mm-hmm. And we say thank you for giving your time.
Well, you're more than welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're sure not welcome. All right. It's nice to meet you.